Hello, and welcome to another episode of Tactical Startup. On this week's episode, we're going to be talking with Adam McChesney. Adam McChesney is a serial entrepreneur located in St. Louis, Missouri. Originally a medical device sales rep, Adam decided to go out on his own in July of 2020 to pursue his passion of helping start and grow businesses through digital marketing. Currently, Adam is an owner partner at Height Digital, where he helps businesses grow online through ROI-driven lead generation. Through his ability to generate leads for other businesses, Adam pursued opportunities to help create an auto glass repair and landscape design company in St. Louis as well. I'm excited to have Adam on here. Let's bring him on, shall we? You're listening to Tactical Startup, a podcast dedicated to building amazing businesses. I am your host, Taylor Darcy. In this podcast, we explore ways to innovate, improve, and level up your business through sales, marketing, automation, and business planning. Successful businesses pivot when times are bad and stay the course when times are good. We will have guests from different walks of life to help you see that success is not only possible, but even probable, no matter when or where you start. Through hard work and strategic planning, you can have the entrepreneurial life you've always dreamed. Tune in weekly to level up your business. Adam, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm good, Taylor. Thanks for having me on. Happy to be here.
Good, good. So let's talk, because I do marketing for my firm, for my law firm, and there's a lot of marketing opportunities out there. And so I'm really grateful that you agreed to come on, because I'd love to pick your brain, not just about law firm, but marketing in general. A lot of my listeners don't necessarily know what marketing is, really. And so I'd love to kind of go over that and talk about your story, how you went from that, why you chose that of things, because I think the why is always as important as how you got there. Tell me about how you got to where you are. Why digital marketing?
Yeah, absolutely. So back in 2018, I had been in medical device sales for a couple of years, and that's really what I always wanted to do ever since I found out about medical device sales in college and started to work my way up a pretty large company called ResMed. So I was selling CPAP equipment and very successful there. Ultimately, was traveling a lot, working long hours, and I always wanted to be my own boss, but I didn't know what avenue I would be able to take in order to do that. I thought that I always needed to reinvent the wheel or come up with some crazy new idea that was really going to be like the next best thing. And in searching for a business and an idea, I came across an ad that taught how to build digital real estate. So essentially building websites, ranking those websites on Google, and then doing paid advertising. So that was back in November of 2018. And I ended up getting promoted shortly after I bought this course and never ended up really touching that course up until right before the pandemic. And so I had just gotten married in late 2019.
Wow.
Was thinking about my future and realized that if I wanted to work my way up the corporate ladder, I was going to have to take on more responsibility, probably be away from my now wife and future family. We don't have any kids yet. And I started thinking about the future, and that's not something that I wanted to do. I kind of wanted to have the freedom to work where I wanted to, when I wanted to, and how I wanted to. So I started kind of doing it as a side hustle. And then when the pandemic hit, obviously we all know what happened there. The medical device industry specifically was hit pretty hard because hospitals were shut down, our customers were shut down. And over the course of 6 to 8 weeks, the side hustle just kind of took off. And I went full time into digital marketing in July of 2020. So we're about a year and a half into this thing, and it's opened some insane doors. We work with clients and companies of all shapes and sizes throughout the country and even the world. And we've also launched two businesses through just search engine optimization that we've turned into businesses out of our ability to be able to generate leads and scale online.
Cool. So what, you know, there's a lot of information out there about search engine optimization and digital marketing and stuff. And I mean, if you ask five people, you're going to get five different answers about what should entrepreneurs be doing, right? How do you market your company? And so I guess what I'd really like to know is, like, you know, there's lots of different strategies. What strategy have you found? I mean, obviously this is going to vary from industry to industry and business to business, budget to budget, right? You can't lump everybody, but you know, the old saying, success leaves clues, right? Or success has a blueprint. What would you characterize as, like, what have you seen the most successful ways of marketing people?
So we're really heavy and have always really been heavy on high quality content. So that normally comprises of your Google business listing for local businesses, as well as ongoing content on your website. So for most of our clients, we're posting to the Google business listing once a week. We're getting over 400 business listings and citations. And then on the website itself, we're writing blogs for our clients that are keyword driven. We're adding location specific pages. We're adding more service pages, and then combining all those things with ongoing backlinks that we actually create ourselves. So there's a quick and easy way to do SEO, right, which is normally going to work maybe for a little bit. And then ultimately Google's going to find out and kind of slap the wrist of the website and be like, right, hey, slow down. So we're in it for the long game with our clients, and we want to take a little bit more of a content heavy focus approach, because at the end of the day, especially as in the eyes of the business owner, if they were to ever leave us, at least they have a bunch of new content that's on their website. Maybe it just didn't work out for whatever reason, but content's never going to go away.
Right. Right. So you were talking about Google My Business. Can you explain a little bit more about that? I know what it is, so I'm not asking for myself here, because there's a lot of local businesses. I have quite a few colleagues that don't use it yet. So tell us about the Google My Business right now. What is that?
So Google My Business is a free listing that you can get for your business in either a local or even the nationwide presence, but it's free and it's widely used. So if you go to the maps section of your phone, or you go to the Google map pack, if you go to Google and you type in, let's just say, lawyer near me or plumber near me, those types of things, you'll see the Google business listings show up even before the organic websites. So a couple things are comprised of when you look at a Google business listing is, one, obviously proximity. So if someone's right across the street from me, they're probably going to show up. But there's also a SEO technique to be able to rank highly as well. So that's making sure that the profile is optimized and filled out completely. You would be shocked, even of the people that have a profile, most of them don't have it filled out to completion. So that's something super simple and easy to do. Getting reviews is extremely important. So making sure that you're getting reviews and having people actually write reviews and not just leave five stars. Those are all keyword driven things that are extremely important. And then, you know, posting photos or having your clients post photos, and then also taking care of your Google business listing and getting more citations. So anywhere that your company information is out there is basically referred to as NAP, which is your name, your address, and your phone number.
Right.
The more of those things that you have out there and making sure that they're all correct, Google just looks at you as an authoritative presence within your market.
Right. What type of, I know entrepreneurs especially are notorious for wanting things to be done now, right? Like they want it to be, they want to see results immediately. What are some realistic expectations that they can have if they were to hire you for services? Like, is it really 6 months to a year? Is it 2 years? I mean, what's the long-term and short-term goals of a campaign that you would launch?
Yeah, absolutely. So industry to industry, city to city, those things are going to change. With the map pack or with your Google business listing, that's more of a 3 to 6 month process. Again, multiple factors go into that. SEO is normally that 6 to 12 month, could even be longer depending upon, you know, if you're in a large metropolitan market in a very competitive industry. What
we want, what we like to focus on with our clients is, what is their ideal client look like? What are they searching, and what are some low-hanging fruit? So for example, with our auto glass company, it's a perfect example. Most of the competitors in our market are going after auto glass replacement because that's what they, that's the high ticket job, right? And for the Safelights of the world, who we compete with, but we outrank them on Google, that's what they're going after as well. But if you think back to the mind of the consumer, most consumers want to at least ideally envision that their glass could still be repaired and it doesn't need to be replaced, because that's going to be a cheaper type of thing. But the market is misinformed. So they're going after and they're typing in auto glass repair, not knowing that that glass isn't going to be able to be repaired. But we're able to capitalize on that because we're one of the few companies that have recognized that from a search engine standpoint. So we do research to figure out what people are actually searching. And yes, we obviously want to rank for the replacement stuff, but there are ways to rank for some of those other highly searched and very return on investment driven keywords. And so there's low hanging fruit everywhere you look. You just have to look in the right places.
Right, right. What about, do you guys do any pay-per-click? That's a fairly popular way of doing
it. We do. Yep. So we do everything from pay-per-click. We also run YouTube ads, Facebook, Instagram. And then we also help some of our clients get set up on Google Guaranteed or Google Screen, depending upon what industry you're in as well.
Right. Okay. So talk to me about, because I know, you know, knowing your ideal audience, right? Or ideal market, ideal client. Tell me what that looks like. Like, how do you go through the process with people and say, okay, you're, because I've found most of them are too broad. Most people are thinking, I want every possible thing in this and nothing less than that, right? But they're, not only does their budget not match it, but their efforts don't match that either. And that isn't a slight. It's just that you have this tendency where if you're a dry cleaner, you want everybody in a 20-mile radius to come use you for your dry cleaning, right? And I'm not dissing that. But we've gotten a lot more granular in our society, right? We've gotten a lot more focused and data driven. And so if you're trying to compete with a shotgun approach, if you will, I'm not sure I like that term, but a too broad approach, I guess would be the best way of characterizing it. I've seen people that have failed miserably, mainly because they did a too broad of approach to their thing. So how do you, with your clients, go about selecting, getting your ideal client, like your ideal audience?
That's a great question. And yeah, we used to kind of leave it a little bit open-ended as well. And we weren't getting good feedback from our clients, or we were getting kind of that generic fluff, like, hey, anyone that's a homeowner, or anyone that would be in a car accident or whatever it ends up being. But we like to walk them through kind of an onboarding strategy session now where we're like, depending upon what industry it is, right? So either the last 5 or the last 10 customers you've had, look at those profiles and figure out what you liked about them and what you didn't like about them in terms of them being your ideal dream client. Figure out what similarities are there, and then figure out obviously the similarities that are good and figure out the similarities that are not so good. And then we try to come up with like an ideal avatar. So an age range, what they're like, where they're located, depending upon the industry, like what their income is, like ideally thinking this stuff out loud. So that way we can start to purpose some of that content directly towards that ideal client. So instead of being like, hey, take a look at your last year worth of clients and then tell us who your best client was.
Right.
Most people can't do that. So we try to break it down to the last 5 or 10. Let's come together and figure out like what that overall consensus of that ideal client looks like.
Okay. And what, like, as far as how long does that take? Because again, you know, they want stuff now, right? I mean, and especially depending on their size of your business and what you're trying to do, you know, they want it today or yesterday. Those are your options. How long of a time period does that usually take to sit down and do this type of process?
So it depends on what service they're doing with us, right? So we do everything from branding, which is going to be website building, brand identity or rebranding and then customer messaging. So if we're doing that, that's normally a couple of strategy session conversations with my VP, with our content team, with our web design team, because we're building that from scratch most of the time. If it's someone that's coming to work with us, they already have a website, we just want to get them leads through search engine optimization or Google ad, that's normally 1 to 2 meetings, because we just need to start somewhere and start getting lead flow. We need to start doing search engine optimization because that can take time. We have to start split testing with ads and then leverage that foundation that is currently there. So kind of just depends on what service we're doing. It's either going to be a longer process on the front end if we're doing a website, or probably 1 to 2 sessions for just jumping into ongoing.
Right, right. Can you explain what split testing is for those people that don't know what that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a variety of things for Google Ads for specifically that we're split testing. So if you think about driving traffic to wherever you're driving traffic to, so we'll start to drive traffic to the homepage. We'll also start to, let's just take lawyers, for example. If you have a business law page versus a personal injury page versus estate planning, you want to be able to drive that keyword specific traffic for any of those things to those individual practice area pages. But we also might try to split test just driving it to a contact page or a homepage. And then we're figuring out, based on the data, what headlines are working the best, what types of descriptions. And then we're able to kind of, in our weekly optimization, so we go in there every single week and then figure out what's working, what some areas of opportunity are, and then put together a plan for that next week. We have enough data to be able to decipher, okay, this is working, let's double down on this. And then also, this doesn't seem to be working, let's kind of either pause or completely maybe step back from that and then move forward from there. So a variety of different things that we're split testing. We also have a leads dashboard that all of our clients have, for example, on Google pay-per-click. So we're actually able to see the keyword that someone clicked to equal a conversion. And then we can see, you know, the client can go listen to that phone call, or they can see the contact form and see what the actual message was. Because what a lot of people think are the great keywords, the money keywords, aren't usually that. Right. And so it's normally the obscure stuff that leads to a really awesome client. And we want to make sure that we're doing everything in terms of putting our clients in the best position, but utilizing data and not just how we think or how we feel.
Right. I think that's so important. And I applaud that, because one of the problems that I see is entrepreneurs are using their gut as a driving force rather than data as their driving force. And I get, like, but when you get emotionally attached to something, like, oh, that's my favorite thing to do. Or of course, you know, this keyword is going to, you know, net the best result, when it's probably going to net you the most expensive result is usually what it is, because everybody else is trying to bid on that keyword too. And I can say that because I've done my own PPC ads. I've done my own stuff. So let's talk about the difference between, and if you know this, if you don't, that's fine. We can move on to something else, but the difference between a website and a sales funnel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk to me about that. You've got the Russell Brunsons of the world that ClickFunnels, he, you know, obviously swears up and down that it's better than a website, which he has a vested interest in doing so. And some of his points are valid, I think, in that websites allow meandering, right? Or it allows people that have high intent to find you. But as far as, like, it's not really good for converting. At least that's what I've perceived. So tell me about that. Tell me about the difference between a website and a sales funnel.
Yeah, so there's definitely a time and place for both. So a website is meant to be a lead generation machine. It's meant to have a lot of content. It's meant to have a lot of search engine optimization on the background. So that way, when people are searching whatever keyword they're searching, you have relevant content to back that up for Google to connect the dots there. So it is usually content, words, overload.
Like that is what a website is kind of
meant to be, but with a easily able to be used, especially on a mobile format design,
right?
So we want just enough to be dangerous, but not overwhelm the end user. So websites have came a very long way, even in the last couple of years.
Right.
Funnels were the thing to do because you couldn't use, you used to not be able to really rank websites without a ton more content and all of those different things. So the best return on investment is normally going to be that website because you're going to have a more, more like a higher quality buyer or higher quality client when they get there because they're doing research. There's content that's connecting the two, all those things. A sales funnel is more of like a brochure where you have to run paid ads to it all day long. They're never going to rank on Google. You kind of have to catch their attention and have them opt in after that. So that's a good and a bad thing. It's a good thing because they do tend to be easier to at least catch the attention and get someone to convert.
Right.
But it's probably not someone that's ready to make a buying decision as quickly as if they were to find you through search engine optimization through your website. So it's not that it won't work,
right,
but you're also going to be capped because you're probably having to spend a bunch of money, do a bunch of email marketing, whatever the situation might be. So your return on investment is always going to be capped because there's the overhead of whatever you're spending to do that versus the website's going to have a ton of content that's just ranking out there and, you know, circling over and over and over again. So there's a time and a place for both. And right, they each have their own spots, but websites are always going to be that foundation that will help drive home the best return on investment.
Okay. Okay. Now, so it shouldn't be an either or thing is what I'm hearing. It should be a combination and you should be using them in the way in which they're meant to be used.
Absolutely.
Is that what I'm hearing? Okay. So my other question is like, honestly, if you're starting a business, you know, people will try to sell you on everything, right? And one of my big pet peeves is, you know, I'll friend somebody on Facebook and they'll immediately send me to like their page. And I'm like, dude, you didn't even buy me dinner or, you know, say hi. I thought we could build a relationship. We don't have a relationship. You know, that's my big, huge pet peeves, but, and then the next one is when they pitch me immediately, right? Like I friended them and then they're like, hey, by the way, do you want to buy this? And I'm like, oh, come on. I need, you know, buy me a drink first, you know, like make me feel like I'm a person and not just a potential sale to you. And I get that takes more work and more effort and maybe I'm not interested right then, but maybe I am later. So I ask this, what's a budget for this? I mean, what type of thing? Because a lot of my people are just starting out or they're getting things. And so money can be tight. And I always recommend, you know, like for most people to get your foundation, you know, set first. Legal, accounting, and marketing, right? Those are your things. While there's not a direct ROI on getting your legal stuff done, it tends to be people stay in business longer when they've engaged an attorney than people that try to do it themselves. I'm not saying that's like 100% blanket statement, but the fact is people that DIY are, because it was so easy to get into, it's so easy to get out of, they don't tend to stay as long as people that seriously invest. So from a marketing perspective and a digital marketing perspective, what can they expect?
Yeah, so there's digital marketing people and opportunities out there of all shapes and sizes, from freelancers to college students to small agencies, large agencies. I always tell people if you're looking to have it done right, you're normally looking at a couple grand for a website. A couple things to consider there is you can get those done much cheaper, but most kind of the gold standard for websites right now is something built on WordPress that's in a custom format and not necessarily a template. They're just going to rank better and be more effective. So you're probably looking at a couple grand there. In terms of ongoing services, you know, you could get search engine optimization for anywhere from $1,000 on up. Just kind of depends on the package and depend on the company that you're working with. And then management fees for paid ads on either Facebook or Google, you're looking at probably anywhere from $500 on up,
depending upon what your budget is that you would spend directly to each platform. So I always tell people, you know, understand what your end goal with this stuff is. If right. you don't want to invest heavily ever in digital marketing, which I don't know many people that have that thought, then right. it really doesn't matter what you have. But I unfortunately have worked with so many business owners where they've went in a different direction in the beginning due to lack of funds, lack of planning, lack of budget, which totally makes sense. But then only to come back 3, 6, 9, 12 months, even 18 months later and be like, hey, I'm way in the hole now because I went with an option of someone that didn't know anything that was cheaper. But now I have nothing and I wasted all that time and money. So we're starting from ground zero. So I just like to tell people to plan it out and to really have an idea of what your end goal is with digital marketing.
Right. I think that's, yeah, like I, you know, I'm a big fan and advocate of planning, right? Like too many people just kind of hope for the best, right? And I get it. When you're starting, there's a lot of stuff that you don't know about. I mean, and the number of things that you need to learn in a very short period of time to be successful is quite high, right? So you're looking at approximately a budget. I mean, for a base, you're looking at about $4,000, $5,000 is what I hear you saying is roughly.
Yes.
To start. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what type of, so you're talking anywhere between 3 and 6 months and maybe even a year or longer. So I guess what type of ROI, like what type of, I mean, what can they, and again, I know that this is going to vary depending on area and business and lots of things, but can you give me a kind of an idea of what people can expect as a return on investment?
Yeah, absolutely. So search engine optimization is always going to be the best return on investment. I mean, we have clients that literally have, you know, 7x return on investment all the way up to one of our clients right now literally is like close to 75x return on investment because they just dominate the first page of Google. So that one is going to be your best return on investment because again, you're not paying ad spend in that.
Right.
With paid ads, so that would be Facebook and Google ads, you're looking at probably more that 4 to 6 times return on investment, just because that's always going to be capped because you're spending ad spend every single month. And then again, some people are going to be lower, some people are going to be higher, just depends on what that average ticket is, what the profit margins are, because one of the things that we want to work with our clients on is we don't want to just look at what is your return on investment based on the number of sales. If you're selling a bunch, but your profit margins are very low and that ad spend is taking up your profit margins, right. It doesn't make sense to keep doing that. So normally search engine optimization, much better return on investment, but again, it does take time. So you're basically creating a runway and not having that 7x plus return on investment for, you know, depends on the timeline, but those first couple of months, and then it just takes off.
Okay. So I can understand. So you really, like, part of the strategy is having a strategy, like to be fair, right? You're going to want to invest in your PPC for your immediacy, right? And then you're going to want to invest in your SEO to give you long-term results thing. Now, I'll be honest with you. I've heard different marketers, and I'm not saying they're 100% right, so don't. I'm not trying to challenge you on this because of that, have said that SEO is dead, that Google is, you know, they're doing away with it because it doesn't make them any money. So what? How do you respond to people that are saying that? Because I have quite a few friends that are marketers that talk about that, and I don't have any reference other than what I do, and I'm just me, so I don't have that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So people say that all the time. Normally what I say, and I know a lot of people that say that, it's because they're very heavily focused in paid ads. Mm-hmm. So if I weren't focused in search engine optimization, I might say the same thing, but we're focused on both. Google Maps is search engine optimization.
Right.
That's never going to go away. Now, what the thought process around what people are saying is that they keep showing more and more ads. They've also added Google Guaranteed or Google Screened even above Google Ads now.
Right.
So there are more pieces of digital real estate that are ahead of the organic SEO. But from a standpoint of Google, they want the most trusted or the most relatable companies on that first page of Google from a organic standpoint. If you are in the mind of the consumer, I know a lot of consumers that won't click on any of the ads because they're like, that person just paid to get there. I want someone that is tried and true, highly reviewed, all of those different things. So
SEO, it is getting tougher to rank,
but it's never going to go away. Blogs are still a thing.
Right.
I think you'll start to see more video content get ranked. I mean, YouTube,
massive search engine in and of itself.
Right.
There's a lot of changes that I think are going to be coming, but SEO in terms of it being there or not being there, I don't think it's going away.
Okay. That's good, because I know, like I said, there's a lot of different, and that makes sense, right? But I think what you're talking about, I think your strategy is consistent in that, you know, you've got to be where your clients are, right? Like it's not as cut and dried as, oh, this is the one way of doing things. It's more about, okay, so if someone's doing a search for something, SEO might be the best way to go because that's what they're going to do. They're going to look at the organic. If they're, you know, if the keywords are there for the PPC, then you've got something. And then same thing goes with the Google My Business and all LSA. So I think it's important that, especially entrepreneurs when they're starting, is that they're looking at their marketing from a strategic perspective and not just simply as what's going to get me the most money as fast as humanly possible, right? Because while that's important, don't get me wrong, like everybody should be trying to get as, you know, as money equally as fast. When you focus on one thing to the detriment of the other, you lose out on the benefits of the other, right? Like having a blog post that ranks that costs you, you know, one time to do versus the PPC that continues, you might be able to scale faster with PPC in some respects, but then you, like you said, you have your cup at your budget. So tell me, let's talk stories here. What have you seen with, what businesses have you seen the success most with? I know you talked about Autoglass, but let's talk about that. Where did they start? Where did they end up at?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've worked with pretty much any main industry that you can think about. So Hype Digital, we're the only digital marketing agency in the entire world that operates in a franchise model. So I ran my own marketing agency prior to joining Hype almost a year ago. So the reason that we're changing the industry is because we're leveraging all of the amazing things that come with working with a large marketing agency. So we have 180 plus full-time team members. We have over 700 clients. We manage about $1.5 million a month in Google ad spend. And that is massive data. And that we cover pretty much any industry that's out there. We have a lot of partnerships with large organizations as well. What most of our clients, if they've worked with a marketing agency that's our size, meaning 180 plus employees managing that much money, they don't like being a client in some instances at those places, because at that point you become just a number.
Right.
The communication isn't normally great. Things are kind of all over the place. So as a franchisee, I have my own forward facing team that just works with me. So it's myself, I have a VP, 5 account managers, and then we all pool together the fulfillment. So if you hire us for Google Ads, we have a Google Ads specialist on your account versus an SEO specialist. But I don't have the overhead of 180 employees. So to answer your question, a lot of our clients are industry to industry. I mean, everything from lawyers to dentists to chiropractors and roofers, because we can pretty much work with any industry and have data that's relevant. So what I like to tell people is we like to work with service-based businesses that their ideal clients are going to Google to find the potential customer of ours. So if you think about it, we work with all those industries that I talked about. Most people don't just know a lawyer, or they don't just know a chiropractor or
a roofer or a plumber, they're going to Google, and we want to work with people who want to be front and center at that standpoint.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. tell me about, should people even entertain the thought of Bing or Yahoo? Because I know that they're kind of like, Google is one. Like, let's just accept the fact, the truth that Google is one. But Bing still exists, and so does Yahoo. They're just very not used very much at all. But is that a place to start for users or for people?
Yeah, so, you know, we work with companies of that are literally just starting up all the way through. Texas A&M is one of our clients. So there are plenty of clients that we work with that they're like, hey, we're in a competitive industry. We cannot compete with those people that are bidding on Google. So in that particular instance, we would go to Bing. We're a Microsoft partner, as we are a Google partner, and we might start them there. We don't really do anything in terms of paid ads or anything like that on Yahoo, but Bing for sure. And as long as you're following all of the SEO techniques and kind of the guidelines for Google, you'll eventually rank on those other platforms as well. So a lot of our clients are getting business on DuckDuckGo, Bing, Yahoo, pretty much anything that's out there where someone can search. As long as you're doing the right things, you're going to show up in those places as well.
Okay. Makes sense. So if you're good for one, you're good for the other is what I hear you say. What's your favorite thing? Like, I mean, like, as far as, you know, when someone comes to you with their marketing, what do you see? What gets you up in the morning? Like, what makes you excited about what you do for somebody?
Yeah. So for me, it's search engine optimization, only because there's not a lot of marketing companies that are out there that practice what they preach and do all of the things that they are telling their clients to do that are paying for them. And what I mean by that, if you type in digital marketing St. Louis, we're the number one results in St. Louis, and we've been in business for less than a year. Our website is organically. If you type in auto glass repair St. Louis, my auto glass company is number one in the map pack in the first page website ranking. So when I can physically show prospects or clients of ours, like, hey, this stuff works, and I know it works because we're doing it for ourselves, and exactly the plan that I have you on is what I'm doing for my companies.
Right.
That really gets me excited. And we've literally created multiple businesses out of just SEO. There was no company, there was no auto glass company before us just doing a project to see if we could get to the first page of Google, and then it happened. So those things are really cool for me. I come from a sales background. But it's really weird. I really know SEO better than most people. So I like to do a lot of technical audits on websites. And, you know, everybody's going to have their own strategy and things like that. But some of the things that most people don't think about or most marketers don't fix on websites, they're pretty glaring things that I'm able to pick up on with our technical audits. So I like to make 4 to 5 minute website audit videos for people that are interested in working with us. And being like, hey, here's where you're at. Here's where you want to be, because you mentioned that these are your competitors, and here's why they're there and you're not. And then we have a much better conversation versus, you know, me just trying to sell them on SEO or sell them on PPC. I want to make sure that I'm doing my homework and understanding where the baseline and foundation is at before we talk.
Okay. So tell me about, what is a technical audit, like, for people that have never heard of it? And so I have another question that I don't want to forget. Besides the technical audit, what about Wix and Squarespace? I'm always curious because, you know, I've heard things, but I don't know how accurate it is. So tell me about the technical audit and those two things.
Yeah, absolutely. So a technical audit is basically, if you look at awesome designed websites, you'll see some amazing websites that are out there that literally never rank. They're full of pictures and cool videos and all of this stuff. But what people don't understand is that Google does not rank cool pictures and videos. They rank they basically read how those images or videos were uploaded to the website. So a lot of people just take those files, and if it says image 1, 2, 3, 4, they just upload it. Whereas on a technical audit, we're able to see that and see what Google is seeing, when really, let's just say you're a business lawyer in St. Louis, that picture, regardless of what it is, should really be business lawyer in St. Louis or business lawyer near me. So we're diving into how pictures are uploaded. We're diving into the headers that they have or don't have, for example, on their website homepage and every single other page. Also taking a look at the titles and the descriptions of every single page. So if a website, for example, is not built with an SEO framework, let's just say it looks great, but on the back end of the website, the title says home, and then the name of the business, which a lot of websites do, Google's going to think that you're trying to rank for home, and then the name of your, like your name of your business. And then we find out that that website generates some traffic, but all of it's branded traffic, Hype Digital. And that's the only thing that it ranks for. So we're looking at those things because normally, as long as it's built on WordPress, you fix some of those technical things. We're not like going to fix everything overnight. Like it's not going to just drastically grow the business.
Right.
But there are some wins that we can get to start pushing things in the right direction. So that's like the on-site technical audit that we do. And then there's all the off-site stuff, which is your backlinks, your citations, press releases, all those things that we end up going to work on.
Interesting. And then Squarespace and Wix, tell me about them.
Yeah, so those are great starter platforms. Like if you're not looking to spend money with a marketing agency, then absolutely, like no doubt about it, those are great things. They're very easy to do yourself. That's more of like a DIY situation. I would never pay somebody to build something on Wix or Squarespace because it's very hard to track conversions. We've just had a lot of issues in taking websites over from those in the past. So like we won't even take on an SEO project. We won't even do paid ads to a site that's on either of those platforms. It's just, it's really hard. It's not to say those things can't be done, but you're essentially going to do double the work with how much technical stuff goes into trying to make it work that you might as well just pay for a website redesign and then start with SEO or paid ads after that.
Right, right. So once again, it comes back to foundation. Where do you want your foundation to be, right? And I see that a lot, actually, because people are like, oh, just throw up a Squarespace or throw up a Wix page. And you're like, okay, except for, you know, if your intent is to actually have it more than a business card, right? Like that's really what we're talking about here is the difference between people that just want a business card up of digital business card, which I mean, I know there are those, but and actual marketing. I know I've looked into the difference between advertising and marketing in the past for myself, but tell me about what the difference is, or if there is a difference, or if I'm just splitting hairs there for no reason.
Absolutely. So I think that when you refer to advertising, like more of that's going to be in the branding portion of it. And there is a difference between, you know, your branding and then also your marketing. So the two and two do have to work together. Your messaging also has to equal what you're trying to do from a lead generation standpoint. But the branding and advertising is more on that creative, that kind of catchiness or the slogan or whatever you're trying to portray to your ideal client. Whereas the marketing is, how do we find those ideal clients? You can't really have one without the other.
Right.
But they are in and of itself two completely different things. That one's more on that front end. How do we draw them in from a brand standpoint and ad standpoint? But the marketing kind of behind it is like, all right, where do we find these people?
Right.
We can't talk to nobody or we can't get anybody working with us if we're talking to nobody.
Right. Right. So what, like, I know, like, the wisdom I share with people, you know, like, mine is get it in writing, so to speak. But from a marketing perspective, what's, like, the one thing that makes you excited when you start talking marketing to people? Like, what's your wisdom, I guess? Because, like I said, mine's contracts, because people underrate them, and they're amazing. Like, people think that contracts are boring. But they're actually one of the best things that you can ever have in the entire life, in your entire world, because of their flexibility, their ability to protect you. There's just so many great things about contracts. So I talk about those constantly. And because they're under talked about, right? Like lots of people will talk about their business entity and, oh, I've got an LLC or I've got a corporation or I've got this or I've got that. And so they get all excited about the entity, which, you know, rightfully so. I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't be excited about your business. Absolutely. But a contract is like a part of a stool, right? You need, my thing is, as I always talk about contracts as being one part of a three-legged stool for protecting your business. You need your entity, you need insurance, and you need your a good contract, right? Those things will go a long ways towards protecting and helping your business succeed. What is that for you? What's the thing that nobody talks about, but you know that helps businesses the most?
So I always tell people that we have to track everything, right? So we're kind of talking about data and data-driven decisions and all of those good things earlier. You would be surprised that, one, not a lot of businesses track their own lead generation, even though marketing companies can put them in a position to be able to do that. But then two, that there are a lot of marketing companies out there that don't track everything. So depending upon the industries, we want to track phone calls if possible. We want to track contact forms. We want to track the sources of all of those different things. And then we want to track the overall initial value of that client. Like what did it turn into or not turn into? And then what's the lifetime value? And if you don't do those things and you're not tracking everything, you can't say marketing worked or marketing didn't work. There's the thing, and I get it, like, right? So there's marketing companies of all shapes and sizes, and most digital marketing, or most people look at digital marketing as kind of like a black guy. Oh, you know, I used this X marketing company, and it didn't work out. I wasted all this money. But at the end of the day, you look back at the campaign, and the client never answered the phone. The client never followed up with any of the contact forms that came in. So unless you're truly tracking literally everything, and you should do this outside of marketing, you know, we still work with some companies that, for example, do flyers sent to the home, or they do yard signs, or right, they're in magazines. If you don't have a call tracking number on there, you're missing the boat. With everything that you do, you need to track it.
Right. Because, I mean, how do you know what's working and what's not working if you don't track it, right? If you're going by your gut could be wrong, right? And here's the other thing is, like, I know I was on a call with somebody about, like, an attorney who would put up a billboard. And, you know, all of a sudden they were getting more leads, but they didn't have a way of tracking that it was from the billboard because they were doing multiple, you know, they were doing PPC, they were doing SEO and blah, 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 blah. And so the problem is when you're not tracking it, you don't know if that billboard was worth its money, right? It could have been, it might have been, or it might not have been. It might have been something completely unrelated to that that just happened to have worked for that very period of time. And so it's a lot like, you know, taking a shot in the dark, right? Like, or you know, having a moving target on your business where you're not throwing the dart against the dartboard and it's moving while you're doing it. And so it's important because imagine, you know, if in the beginning you're going to not see as great of an ROI on anything, right? Because you don't know what's going to work for you and what's not. But if you can hone your message and hone your marketing to the point where you can spend exactly what you need to in order to get the type of results that you're looking for, then that's when it's time to scale. I was on a call not long ago with the author of Atomic Habits. Have you read that book?
I have, yes.
Yeah. And it's a fantastic book, and I highly recommend my listeners read it. But one of the things that he said was standardize, then optimize. And that was such fantastic wisdom, right? Standardize your processes. Standardize you're going to post your website every week. Standardize that you're going to get your website up. Standardize that you're going to pay your pay-per-click every week, right? Like, or whatever your budget is for things. Standardize how you do things. And then you can make those movements so that every dollar counts, right? Like, so you're going to see a better ROI, a more consistent ROI on anything you do when you are spending when you have standardized, then optimized, rather than trying to optimize first and then standardize, because you're really shooting a different duck at that point, so to speak, not to use a hunting analogy there too much. So, okay. If I was a new business, like literally just got my LLC started, hint, hint, hint for all my listeners. What next? How would you start marketing something that had literally just launched?
Yeah, so I think it all kind of goes back to the strategy of where things are at, because businesses launch in different fashions, right?
So if you have a particular product or a service that the capacity, you know, your ability to take on more jobs or sell more products or whatever it ends up being, most of the time people are not equipped to be able to blow up overnight. So a lot of our clients in the very beginning stages, and again, we see it on both ends of the spectrum, but some people are like, hey, no, I need more business right now, or I really want business in the next 6 to 12 months. So depending upon that, we're helping our clients, or we're recommending to clients to start building your digital foundation. So if that's a WordPress website, or that's just like, you have to get something up, right? So even if you are getting up a Wix website or a Squarespace website, at least your domain is getting registered and the search engines are picking up on it. I just would never pay someone to build one of those websites versus paying someone to build a WordPress website. Right. So you have to understand, I think, what your tolerance for either not having business or having too much business looks like, and put a plan and strategy in place for that. So that might be Google Ads, that might be SEO, that might be nothing, but understanding, hey, I have to have X number of clients per week by this time next year, or in 6 months, and then working backwards from that, either with a marketing company or doing it yourself.
Right, right. Do you have any DIY options just in case? While I do not typically recommend DIY for the same reasons that I don't recommend DIY for legal matters, but just in case, because there are going to be those few that are like, I don't have the budget for that. And I get that a lot. Like, those aren't my clients. Those aren't the people that I want to work with. I want people that are wanting to invest in their business. I sometimes, depending on the client, I will point them in a direction that says, go there. Very rarely, mainly for those reasons, because it's not done right. You get what you pay for. And while DIY works great for building something, like if you're going to build a dresser, you can DIY the crap out of that and do amazing with it. But when you're talking about highly technical things, or when there's significant consequences for get it wrong, that's when you outsource, right? Like accounting, bookkeeping, marketing, attorneying, all of that stuff have, you know, those are not things that you want to try to DIY. Those are the things you want to have people in the position to do it as much as possible. But do you have any of those resources?
I specifically don't right now. I am working on building out a YouTube channel to kind of talk about a lot of the basics and putting some training videos and things like that together. But it definitely won't be like a step-by-step, it'll probably be more of our ongoing services. So SEO, Google Ads, et cetera.
Sure.
But I always tell people and point them in a direction. There's a ton of YouTube content that's out there for people to literally go learn it themselves. There's a couple channels that I've referred people to in the past, but nothing that's really over the top, at least at this moment in time.
Okay. I think that would be valuable and worthwhile. You know, people that maybe they don't have the budget to spend on full service, but maybe you have teach like a masterclass in digital marketing, right? Where you do the nuts and the bolts and the how-tos and stuff like that. Because I think that would improve your value, right? Like when people start seeing how hard legal stuff is, or when they start see how hard digital marketing is, all of a sudden they go, you know what? Maybe I do have the money for that, because I'd rather have them deal with that, right? Like that's the thing, is that I love getting into the nitty gritty of a contract. I love getting into these things. And so if you don't, why do it? But thoughts about that, being able to develop a course and nuts and bolts. Thank you so much for the time that you've given me today and my listeners. I have a few questions that are for fun. These are just so people get to know you. No pressure whatsoever. But what is something you hate but wished you loved?
So I hate the organizational tasks. So things like, you know, cleaning the house, that doing the dishes, laundry, but just being like I'm an organized person when it comes to staying in my lane, but I'm a visionary within our organization. So both in my business and in my personal life, I just wish I was more organized on kind of those mundane tasks that a lot of people don't like to do, but, and I definitely don't like to do them either. And it kind of comes to be a problem at times.
I understand about that. What's your worst roommate or house guest story? And just in case your wife's listening, I wouldn't bring up anything regarding her. Just at a hunch.
So it's definitely not her.
Good.
Probably the worst roommate story. So I had a roommate in college. So we were living in a apartment building where it was three bedrooms. So for half of the year, I was with my friend from high school that we played soccer together and
knew each other for quite some time. Well, the other bedroom, that my roommate at the time wanted to go in there. He's like, hey, I want my own room for the next half of the semester. Well,
I ended up getting the short end of the stick. We had this other roommate that came in, and he was
not the cleanest person.
People would always prank him. Well, literally one time they pranked him by putting a banana in his pillow, and he literally smashed it and slept in that banana filled pillow for a couple of weeks. And then we could not figure out like what was going on, why our room smelled literally so bad. It's because he had this big nasty pillow, and like we just thought that that was the smell of it. And come to find out, like, he just was like, it was so bad. I have nightmares of like those couple months with him. But yeah, that's probably the worst thing ever.
Oh man, that is bad. I am so sorry. Like, I've had some questionable roommates in the past before my wife. So I know that. I had one in particular that I was staying. He was a unique soul. I had been in the room, not his room. And I'd been on the phone talking to my cousin. And my cousin and I, you know, you talk differently to your cousin than you do to normal people because you just relate differently to your cousin. And I got off the phone from my cousin, and I had referred to him the same way I'd referred to my cousin. And the minor detail was my cousin is a girl, and he's a guy. And so I said inadvertently, "You go, girl," something to that effect. I don't even remember the detail, but he took so much offense to that. And I was like, why are you? I mean, I was talking to my cousin who's a girl. It had literally nothing to do with you, dude. And he just was greatly offended about that. And that relationship went downhill not long after that. Like, I had to move out because we just did not. I was like, it just threw me. Like, I didn't mean anything by it. It was just because I'd been in that habit of talking to my cousin, and it had nothing to do with him. But yeah, I've had some doozies. Anyway, last question. What's something weird that you recommend everyone tries at least once?
So I don't know necessarily like how weird it truly is, but fasting for 24 hours. I kind of think it's weird. I mean, again, it's probably one of those things that some people think it's weird, some people think it's normal, but I've only done it once, but it was recently and it was phenomenal. So I'm probably going to do it again, but it's definitely worth trying. I think the way that your body reacts to fasting and how you feel and some of the things that like it's a very mental challenge just as much as it is anything else. So I think you realize a lot and realize your association or relationship to food and to water. That was like the only thing that I was drinking. So I think fasting at least once is definitely, at least for 24 hours, is definitely something that I would recommend to anyone.
Okay, cool. Now, was it for religious reason or just health reasons?
No, it was just for health reasons, just to kind of see. I had, heard other people do it. I'm like, I'm one guy. As long as it's not anything insane, I'll try it once.
Okay. And finally, where can my listeners contact you if they'd like to speak with you more about your services?
Yeah, absolutely. So the two best places to find me, you can go to adammcchesney.com.
So that's Adam McChesney, AdamMcChesney.com. And that will take you to our Hype Digital St. Louis page. You can fill out the contact form there, especially if you want a free audit of your online presence. And then the other place is going to be Instagram. So Adam L. McChesney. And you can find me there or on the website.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Adam. Sincerely appreciate the time. And I hope you have a great week, and we'll talk to you later, okay?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Taylor. Great time.
Well, that was Adam, and it was great to talk with him and share some of his digital marketing secrets and information. As always, thank you for listening to Tactical Startup. Make sure that you give a like and a subscribe to the YouTube channel. Make sure you give 5 stars on Apple, wherever you get your podcasts at. And until next time, make sure you're thinking tactically about your business.